Hello. This is a show is abled, the show of possibilities. My name is Dr. Stephen W. Nurse. I retired in 2014 from Central Weiss University, where I managed the Master Teacher Program in the Seattle area and taught special education classes to graduate and undergraduate students. I've lived on Vachon since 1985 with my wife, Barbara, of 49 years, and I raised two daughters here. I became disabled in 1971 when I was on my honeymoon in San Francisco, and the cause was transverse myelitis. Since then, I've used a wheelchair for mobility. Many times, persons with disabilities are defined in life by what they cannot do. I believe as a person with a disability that persons with disabilities should instead be defined by what they can do. The concept may be a new paradigm, but it's also the essential theme of my show is Abled. There will be two shows a month. We're going to do these shows on related to disabilities. Our first series of shows is going to be on service dogs for persons with disabilities, comfort dogs, therapy dogs, and we're going to call this series Who Let the Dogs Out? So let's go ahead and get started. Today I have a person who I'm interviewing. Her name is Kim Hyde. She's the service dog program manager at Prison Pet Partnership. I'll let her tell you about the program, but essentially this is a program that trains women who are inmates at the Correctional Center in Purdy. So, Kim, why don't you tell me, first of all, what you do at Prison Pet Partnership, and then we'll go into more questions about the women who are in the program and how they get in the program.
Sure. Thank you for having me today, Steve. We train women to train service dogs that are incarcerated at the Women's Correctional Facility over in Gig Harbor. And we train them also in grooming and kennel management. And we work with them also to train pet dogs in basic obedience for people that are traveling and want to do a board and train program. So we offer a large variety of different programs within our program.
And how many inmates participate in the program?
Right now we have 15 that are currently enrolled. We can take up to 20.
Okay. And what are the requirements? I remember that when I was working there teaching GED classes and working with the program, that the program to train the dogs and to do the grooming was considered one the women really wanted to get into, probably because it had an outcome. They got an occupation out of it. And so what are the requirements for them to get into the program?
Right now, we have them meet several requirements. One is that they have a GED or a high school education, and that they have also been incarcerated for at least a year. They have been a year without a major infraction, 90 days without a minor infraction, and that they have completed our basic pet care course.
It seems like it must be working, because whenever I've visited there, I see a lot of the same faces. So I think that's good. You've got inmates there that are not committing infractions.
Yes.
You think it also makes a difference that if they're working with the dogs, that the dogs kind of rely on them? I mean, there's got to be a bonding or a relationship with the dog, too.
Oh, absolutely. And the prison itself, the management as well as the officers comment on that regularly, that the dogs just seem to change the energy in the units where they are, and also with the inmates that they are around. They offer calming, they offer more relaxation, and a focus. You know, if you've got nothing else to focus on all day except yourself, having that dog there is just a great way to improve yourself and focus that energy.
Now, when the women work with the dogs, do they sometimes take the dogs back into their living facilities too? Or are they?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, all of the service dogs in training do go back and stay in the units with the inmates in their rooms. And they live with them day in and day out, just like they will when they're placed as a service dog.
I think sometimes the dogs are kind of the rock stars because when I visited the prison there and I was coming through with my previous service dog, Ellen, and I'm walking through the yard, everybody's saying, you know, oh, hello, Ellen, hello, Ellen. And, you know, Dr. Nurse comes later. So I'm fine with that. But I think that's really positive.
Yes.
How is the program funded? I think it's, you know, we always worry about that when we talk about, you know, governmental programs and those kinds of things.
Yes, and we are a nonprofit, so we are funded mostly through private donations, and we don't receive government assistance. We do have some money coming in from the grooming and boarding, and that also supports our program. It just kind of goes right back to supporting what we do because of what is given to us.
Yeah, so. I know they have an annual auction, which they didn't have this year, so...
We have a few fundraisers like that.
this whole COVID thing must be kind of affecting your kind of bottom line.
Oh, absolutely. It's affected us in a lot of ways due to the COVID. We had to remove the dogs in training from the prison, and they've been in foster care now for 6 months. We're still struggling to try to get them back in there. But, you know, the prison has their priorities, which is the safety of the women. And they felt like having to manage the dogs in the middle of COVID was not a good choice. So hopefully they'll be able to come back in soon, though.
Yeah, and there's with the dogs, there's a lot of hands-on, that's for sure.
Yes, and not social distancing because you walk up to a dog.
Yeah. My dog doesn't social distance at all.
Exactly.
And refuses to wear a mask. So
tell you what.
Tell us a little, kind of a brief history of Prison Pet Partnership. How long has it been around? And
it's been around about 30 years. It was established in 1981 by Sister Pauline, and she originally started it, for the inmates to give them a way to give back and also to give them a way to focus on something positive when they were incarcerated. And she started it with three dogs and three inmates, and it was the first prison based program for assistance dogs in the United States. So it's a really, really big deal.
And I've met her, and I think that she just recently passed away.
She did, yes.
And but she started that program. Is it in other correctional institutions too, or?
This program is not, but there are hundreds of them now across the United States and in other countries that utilize the prison system as either part or a majority of their training for their service dogs.
You know, we always talk about programs for persons who are incarcerated, and I think we really want to look at the future. In other words, the vast majority of people that are incarcerated now are eventually going to get out. So what are the positives about this program when these when the persons, the women in the program are released from prison?
Well, the pet care industry itself is one of the few industries that continues to grow, even in this economy. So when the women get out, they've got experience with boarding and grooming and training, and they have a better opportunity to get a job. And that is really what helps keep them out and makes them a better person in our communities. And that's absolutely accurate. I say that all the time. These people will come back to us, and they'll be part of our community. And if they're able to focus on boarding, grooming, or training and get a job, be successful, support themselves, then hopefully they can put all this behind them and move on.
You know, and I've heard some statistics, and I've even used them when I was doing research when I was in college, was that once people are released from prison, if they can get a job within 6 months of the time that they're out of prison, their chances of not reoffending are much greater. In other words, they're not going back to what they were doing in their old communities. So I think that's probably a positive. Would you also say that, and this is kind of from my experience, that sometimes the inmates that are in the program have kind of burned all their bridges on the outside world and are now kind of rebuilding, and that bond with the dog is a really positive one.
Yes, and I think those of us that have a relationship with an animal would agree that it makes us a better person overall. And statistically, yes, 35% of the individuals that release from prison return. There's just a very bad rate of recidivism. And with our program, though, we've managed to keep it to less than 5% have reoffended and returned to prison. So we believe that the animals are, in fact, a huge part of that, if not solely responsible for that.
Yes, and also, I would also think, again, that the fact that they, you know, when people have jobs, you feel positive about yourself. And it seems like with most of the inmates that I've been aware of that have been in the program, when they get out, they immediately get jobs and have a place to go. And I think that's really, really important. How do you choose, let's say you're training the dogs for different clients. What type of, do you tie the dog to the client, or do you get the client first? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, the dog or the client, or how does that work?
It's a little bit of both. You know, we tend to invest more time in the dogs, even up to 2 years of training. So I guess I would have to say a lot of times the dog might come first. It just depends, though, because some clients do wait longer than that for a dog. And there's a part on both sides to play of the matching process, looking at that person's needs and that dog's talents, as well as the opportunity to have a good living situation. The dog isn't too high energy. The person isn't too low energy. So, yes, there's a certain amount of meshing involved in that.
Then I'm thinking with the dog that you placed me with, I'm going to have to increase my energy level a whole lot. Kim just has been working with me this last week, and this is actually my third service dog. Her name is Maya, and she's under the table right now, and she's being very good. So that's great. What a couple years ago, I did the keynote at the graduation for some of the women,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like some of the dogs were trained for very specific skills. Can you talk about that a little bit? How would you train it? You know, what are some of the skills that these dogs are actually helping people with?
There's a lot that the dogs can do. At Prison Pet Partnership, we train dogs to assist with mobility, whether a person is utilizing a chair or crutches or walker or maybe not any of that yet. And we train dogs to assist with those types of disabilities, with a retrieve of dropped items, opening and closing doors and drawers, hitting a touch plate for a handicap accessible door, sometimes providing balance, either a third point of contact for that or for a third point of contact for a transfer, and also counterbalancing on stairs, inclines and declines, and helping somebody if they've fallen and need that third point to get up off the ground.
And I also recall there was a, I don't know if you know this person or not, but they trained one of the dogs. I think he had seizures.
Yes, we also train our service dogs to do a seizure response, not an alert. There are a few organizations that are guaranteeing alert right now, but there's so many variables to epilepsy and to seizures that that's not something we felt confident enough to say that we can predict. So we train the dogs to respond to the seizure either by getting help from somebody in the household, providing body pressure and comfort and laying on or next to the person, helping to turn them on their side so that they don't choke if they tend to be a little bit mouth watery when they seize.
Sure.
And or also just trying to bring them out of that seizure, licking them, nuzzling them. helping them, you know, let them know that everything's okay. But most importantly, the seizure dogs carry identification and instructions. One of the worst things about having seizures is that when people see you having a seizure, they call an ambulance. And that's a lot of money every time an ambulance gets called and you get taken to a hospital. So if you don't need that type of treatment and care and you can carry those instructions and the dog can say, don't call here, call my significant other or a family member instead and make sure before you call an ambulance, then that is just huge for a person with seizures. We do try to really focus on doing those two types well, mobility and seizures. We recently added in this year also as sort of an experiment, training service dogs for veterans and first responders with PTSD. And we did a couple pilot placements of that this last year, and it went really, really well. We don't have a really large program, so we don't want to go too far with what we offer, but it's a good opportunity for the inmates to learn something new and for dogs that fit that job category.
Where do you get the dogs? How?
We used to have all 100% rescued dogs. Now we don't use as many rescued dogs or donated dogs as we do purpose-bred dogs that we get. We're attempting to start a breeding program, and we right now are getting dogs through an organization that is Assistance Dogs International has created a breeding program. And we get puppies donated to us through this co-op, and the puppy can grow up and be a service dog, or it could grow up and potentially be used for breeding if it's really perfect. We haven't found the perfect dog yet. So we've been placing most of those dogs up till now. But like I said, we look at every dog that gets donated to our organization as a service dog, potential first. And then if it doesn't make it, that's okay. It can do whatever it wants to do for its life.
Well, I know you have the program there too called Paroled Pets.
Yes. And
so there are dogs that just, as I understand it, just have some little quirk or not. Can you talk about that a little bit? How are they?
Absolutely. Paroled pets could be a number of different things. It could be a smaller dog that we, you know, probably wouldn't consider as a service dog, like a Chihuahua or Terrier or a mix of that. But the inmates train them. They are required to train them to a certain level and also hopefully get their AKC, Canine Good Citizenship achievement. And then we adopt them out. This could be service dogs that maybe don't like going in new places, service dogs that may not like riding in a car. It could be a service dog whose hips or elbow isn't quite good enough for us, or a dog that we adopt from the shelter that may not love other dogs. And it's more than we'd want to place with a person with a disability. But they're still great pets, and they're completely adoptable.
And they're trained.
And they are trained, yes.
A lot of training that goes into those, yes. How old are the dogs when you get them?
The puppies come into our program at 8 weeks. We get dogs of all different ages, though. Some of the Paroled Pets come to us even at 5 or 6 years. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Because yep. I know my Ellen, my previous service dog, she'd come in at a fairly young age.
Yes, and we prefer them younger.
Yeah. So, you take it kind of varies how long it takes to train the dogs?
It does. We look at a minimum of 6 months. We try to cap it at 2 years, 24 months of training. So at that point, they could be 2.5 or 3. But if it's a really specialized task or skill, it could be right around there or a little longer.
And if someone wants to get a service dog, what's the process they go through to request that?
For any program, you just contact the program and ask for an application. Right now, due to COVID, our applications are closed.
Okay.
But we're hoping to open them back up next year in 2021. But at that point, we have a free pre-application that I send out, and it's just about a page and a half of some questions on lifestyle and needs and disability and making sure you have a disability and a lifestyle that makes you eligible for our program. If that goes well, then I send out the full application packet. The application packet includes physicians forms.
Oh, it was long. I remember filling that out. Yes,
it is. It's and it's got references and it's got a lot of different aspects to it to again make sure that we're trying to make sure you're eligible for the program that we can assist you with the right dog. And if that goes well, there's a $50 application fee, and then we come to your home and do an in-person interview. And that interview is, again, looking at your lifestyle, looking at your home, looking at your other pets if you have them, and trying to determine if we can train a dog to assist you.
You know, I've adopted two kids, and I kind of remember going through the process with you when I got my service dogs, and it kind of is the same process. There is a home study, you know, we check the home out to make sure everything is okay there, and yep. You get lots of questions, and that's really important. So they fill out the request, and I'm sure you get a lot of requests. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is fair to say. We do. We get a lot more requests for, I would say, people we can't help than for people that we can help, because you know, we have a very narrow criteria of what we are able to serve. So, and then, yeah, people go on our waiting list. Our waiting list is 3 to 5 years on average. It sort of depends on the needs and on the dogs that are available. And there's just simply no way to predict that.
And you mentioned that the women that work with the dogs have to have at least 2 years remaining on their sentence.
Yes.
And why is that?
Just because we have determined that's the amount of time, a minimum amount of time that they need to be able to participate in our program and make progress and learn things. Even with 2 years left on their sentence, by the time they're getting short time, they've got their mind in other places. They're involved with other pre-release activities. So we want to make sure that they can focus at least for a full year.
And do you follow up with the animals after they've been placed?
Absolutely. The service dogs, we do monthly follow-ups for 6 months and then annually thereafter. And anytime the person needs assistance, the paroled pets, we try to check in once every year or so.
Mm-hmm. And you do that to make sure that guys like me aren't slacking off and working with all my commands and doing things right. And as you told me, not letting Maya be sloppy with her commands. Right?
It's a little bit of that, yes. And it's also because we are an ADI, Assistance Dogs International, accredited organization, and that's part of our accreditation routine or criteria that we routinely check in on everybody.
And I think a lot of people really don't have a good concept of really what a service dog is.
Agreed.
I know that, you know, we talked in my first session that under the ADA, really, the ADA really only addresses certified type dogs. It's not a comfort dog or a comfort snake or, you know, something like that.
Yes.
And let's talk about the recertification, because I know I've done that a few times, but just let folks know what that is.
It's every year we come in and we check on your skills, what the dog is still doing to assist you, as well as your dog's ability to assist you in public. We perform the public access test every single year, which just, again, is looking, is that dog comfortable? Is that dog calm? Is that dog able to be in public? And is it healthy? Is it a good weight? You know, is it a good service dog? And are we doing the person and the public justice by having that dog in public? So by checking in every year, we do that. And then once the dog approaches to be about 11 years old, we start talking about retirement. We have a mandatory retirement of 12 years of age of the dog.
Right, and I know my Ellen was getting up there, and
yep.
She was getting close to 13, I think.
Yes.
So she was in need of retirement, and she's teaching Maya now the ropes at my house, what goes and what doesn't.
Yes.
I've actually seen her improve her behavior, too.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. What do you, when you work with the inmates, do you really see some improvement in them too? It seems to me that when I've been in the program, it's just a sense of they're really pleased with what they're doing.
Yes.
It seems like the staff works really well with them. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And I think the biggest thing I observe consistently is a change in their self-esteem. And I think I hate to say anger management, but their ability to control their emotions. That's hard for women.
Yes.
It is. And it's hard for women in prison as well. They're in a very frustrating, stressful situation. And the dogs just seem to innately calm them and give them focus. And, especially this past 6 months without dogs, I've really just watched them, become more stressed. And I can't describe the difference it is when they have their dogs and they have that daily focus and that partnership.
Yeah, and what I've been there, I think I see that too. And it also seems to me that they really support each other in that program.
Yes.
I think that's really key.
That is. And it's about all of us supporting each other. So.
We're getting close to closing this interview, but. Overall, if there's anything you could change about the program, what would it be?
I would make it available to more of the inmates.
Uh-huh.
Make it larger and better and give us the ability to change more people's lives.
And all employees should get $1 million a year and a new car. I think that would that would also work.
Agreed.
So thanks very much for this interview.
Thank you.
And appreciate your help and... thanks for working with me with my dog, and try not to be too hard on any of us.